Hello and welcome to The Scoop, a provincial newscast and podcast with stories from LJI journalists around British Columbia. Each week, reporters from Revelstoke, Cortez Island, Kootenay, Terrace, Prince George, and Smithers will share the news affecting their place in BC. I'm your host and producer, Pamela Hassan, from CSCK News in Smithers. The Scoop was made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Local Journalism Initiative Program, or LJI. Follow The Scoop on CICK Smithers Community Radio, 93.9 FM, every Thursday and Saturday at noon, online at smithersradio.com, and of course, wherever you get your podcasts. Today on The Scoop for August 1st, 2024, thousands of salmon are headed upriver to their home systems to spawn and then die. Many salmon will complete this journey, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the population is healthy. Dan Messick is speaking to a 29-year veteran fisheries technician, Brian Michel, and Sam Vincent, a fisheries technician with Wet'suwet'en Fisheries, on that scoop. Wildfires continue to affect the everyday lives of British Columbians, and Stoke FM's Melissa Jameson is reporting on the Alpha Creek wildfire, which resulted in an evacuation alert last week. Look under your seat. You get a grant. And you get a grant. We all get grants. On Cortez Island, it's grant season for the Cortez Island Community Foundation 2024 Micro Grants for Neighbors program. CKTZ's Louis Belcourt is on the scoop.
Research in the Bulkley and Maurice River systems, home streams of the Wet'suwet'en Nation, has been ongoing for decades, but new studies into the shift in distribution of Maurice sockeye especially is shedding light on their future. Maurice sockeye populations have been depressed for years, but an electronic tagging program conducted by the Wet'suwet'en Fisheries at the Wet'suwet'en Canyon is helping track where Maurice sockeye are spawning, which could help Wet'suwet'en Fisheries better understand what new habitats these fish are populating and protect those areas for future spawners. It's a lot of work, but the science is bringing the community together. Today, we'll chat with Brian Michel, a 29-year veteran fisheries technician with the Office of the Wet'suwet'en, and Sam Vincent, a fisheries technician with the Wet'suwet'en Fisheries Department. Stay with us.
My name is James Brian Michel, fishery technician for Office of Wet'suwet'en. We're at the beach seine site where we do tag and release of target species, which are sockeye, coho when they come in, and steelhead. The operation consists of a jet boat and a 200-meter net, knotless net, to protect the salmon. When the technicians get here, they prep the site, load on the net, and as soon as the net is on board, the time starts, so they'll wait 15 minutes in between sets, so at least two sets an hour. But when the fish are here, we're lucky to get one an hour, so we're starting to pick up a lot now. We're doing some fly tags and some radio tags on the sockeye. But when the coho are here, we'll be doing just fly tags and steelhead. If there's any recaps, they'll go into the... The reason we do the 15-minute wait is because of the recaps. If we did a set right away, we'll be cooking the books. So we wait 15 minutes just to let the tags go. Then we'll wait another 15 minutes every day. They do a classic horseshoe set. There's always a safety person on board with the driver. Keep an eye on the net. Any snag ups, you'll let them know. But when they come in, they'll have to pull lead line and the corks on both sides. And when you bring in the net with the bag of fish, they'll have to start sorting it out. We usually go with the target, which is sockeye, and steelhead. Those are the main ones that we tag, so we'll get those out of the way right away. If we tagged the sockeye this morning, they tagged four this morning, I believe, and they have to do the same thing, the measurements, but this time they have to get the scale, five scale samples off that target, and DNA sample. That'll be the tail punch. And that goes in the envelope for each fish.
I guess in your 29 years,
you know, what has changed for you? What have you seen in the change here and in the canyon? Kind of what's the difference between when you first started to now?
The big change was probably the Chinook numbers. I've noticed the Chinook numbers just drop quite a bit. And it's like that every species. If one is protected, the other one will get hit. So we see that up here. But we notice our first set every morning was actually a big set of Chinook, at least 50. Now we're lucky to catch one. So that's the big change.
What is this all for? What are you hoping that this will do?
The radio tagging would give us the timing of each. Say there's Atna sockeye, then there's a main stem, Maurice Lake, there's spawners there, and the big one is Nanaka. So timing is everything for us. When we get each of the systems that I mentioned, we'll know the timing when we get this, when we start the tag of Floyd tagging. So we could see when each run is going through.
And have you noticed that change as well, like the timings have shifted?
Yes, the heat or the change of weather seem like they're coming up a little earlier. June, July, before it was July when we seen them, but now we're starting to see them a little earlier.
This one's an applied female. Looks like some net marks. 55 is the four point. This one's got pretty good condition. Pod yellow tag is 14062.
As Brian Michelle runs the beach seine on the lower end of the canyon, Sam Vincent is overseeing a crew at the top of the Whitsett Canyon at the falls. Dip netters use long poles and nets to scoop out sockeye trying to get up the falls. Many of the fish are tagged and sent back, but some are used for food fish to keep the community fed, a practice hundreds of years old. The samples and data being collected will not only help rebuild the Maurice sockeye populations, but keeps the traditional practice of dip netting alive, passing on the knowledge to a new generation.
My name is Samantha Vincent. I'm a Wet'suwet'en fisheries technician, and right now we are in Whitsett, BC.
And Sam, tell me, you know, how does this start? What are you guys doing here at the Wet'suwet'en fisheries at the canyon?
So what you're witnessing in the canyon is the Whitsett Mark Recapture Program. You're seeing our two top fishermen using the dip net to bring the salmon to the tagging table and the holding tanks, where they will apply DFO passive tags. And on top of that, we are deploying radio telemetry tags so that we can track the sockeye salmon back to the headwaters and the spawning grounds.
And tell me a little about the setup here. So you got a couple of fishermen who are dip netting in the canyon. What are they pulling out of the canyon?
Right now they are pulling out sockeye, pink, a few steelhead. The fishermen will transfer them to the runners. They'll bring them to the tagging table, hold them in the tanks, and then after that they're released.
What information are you taking? It looks like Willie was measuring them. What are they doing?
Okay, so what they're doing is they're gonna sex the fish, they take DNA samples, they take scale samples to be paired with the radio telemetry, radio tags that are going out. Willie's measuring the length from nose to fork in the tail. They're getting the sex, they're taking the scale samples. The caudal punch is for DNA. All of that data is recorded so that we can better track the sockeye going back up to the headwaters and spawning.
Why does Wet'suwet'en Fisheries do this every year?
Wet'suwet'en Fisheries runs this program every year because our Maurice recovery unit, as we call it, the Maurice Atna Nanaka stocks, have been endangered for more than 20 years. And this information that we gather here helps to feed our nation as an accurate number of escapement and spawning to help us better make decisions when it comes to harvesting for FSC purposes.
You know, what does it mean to you to do this work, to try to help inform the nation to see, hopefully see, more sockeye come back to the territory?
Well, now that I've been involved in this program, I recognize the nation need to be able to continue to sustainably harvest our sockeye for FSC needs. This program has really enlightened me in the processes of just how long it's been that the Wet'suwet'en have been trying to recover this stock.
You guys are doing the work up at the Maurice. How does that juvenile program kind of relate to some of what you're doing here?
So the sockeye smolt program that we run up at Wet'suwet'en, Maurice Lake, we can use the data of the smolts leaving the headwaters, kind of gives us a better idea of how accurate, you know, spawning escapement counts are. What's leaving the lake gives us a better idea of what may return.
You know, salmon are such a big part of the culture, and what does salmon mean to you?
Salmon really reflects our resistance, our culture. To me, taking those cultural teachings, they're becoming a lost art. We lose fishermen. They have been indoctrinated into thinking that conservation is the only way. We no longer have food sustainability within our nation, because this has been such a long struggle that our people have been discouraged and they no longer fish. They no longer use this sockeye to sustain their social and cultural needs.
This is a CKTZ News update. I'm Louis Belcour.
The Cortez Island Community Foundation announced their funded projects for the 2024 Microgrants for Neighbors program, which included four different projects working with Clahoose Nation members, including a Helping Elders Heal program, design work being done for a group of Namkwan singers, and a project working on Clahoose regalia and a workshop to go along with. There were 32 applicants and 14 projects funded by the program, and the Cortez Island Foundation used their entire budget of about $6,000, says Isabel McKnight, executive administrator at the Cortez Island Community Foundation. I spoke with her for more.
Tell us a little bit about the microgrants announcement this year, and did you do anything differently this year or any new updates?
So this year we had 32 applications for microgrants for neighbors, which is awesome. It's even more than last year. And we were able to fully fund 14 of those projects, which actually ended up taking our entire budget of over $6,000, which is amazing. We really worked on advertising and spreading the word and making sure we had a really diverse jury that they help make the decisions for the microgrants. We were super lucky to get Georgina from Clahoose, and she really helped take on a leadership role in getting applicants from Clahoose to apply. And so we feel super grateful that we were able to fund four projects for the Clahoose community specifically.
And can you give a few details on some of those notable projects that are going to be supportive of the Clahoose community?
Of course. So we have Anna, who's going to be working on the community garden there. She's a member of the Clahoose community and also a youth there, which is awesome. One of the applications that we received and that we're funding is called Helping Elders Heal. So what they described the project as is a two-day workshop for Clahoose elders that's focused on orthopedic body work, stretching and exercise. And they're hoping to be able to bring an Indigenous practitioner in who could help the elders manage pain and promote wellness. Another program is designed for Namkwan singers. And sorry if I'm pronouncing that wrong. They're hoping to get vests designed for their drumming group. And they've described it as that this program will support the community effort to take a more powerful role and presence in the community, both at Clahoose and beyond. So that would be an amazing program to see. And another one is an Indigenous regalia workshop. So they would be working on getting materials put together to create traditional regalia and dress for different ceremonies that they use in their community. So not only would they be able to have it for the community, but they would be able to teach members of the community how to make these traditional dresses and regalia.
Just coming off of National Indigenous History Month in June, what does it mean to have such good engagement this year with our local Indigenous peoples?
Yeah, so we're super excited that we have had lots of engagement from the Clahoose peoples throughout this program. One of the really big things that the foundation is trying to work on is just increased accessibility for all different sectors of our community, not only providing a portal to apply online because that's not accessible to everybody, but canvassing, doing door-to-door, advertising where different communities will see it. For example, we have kind of connections in each different sector that we get to help promote whatever we think would be beneficial for them. So putting it in the seniors newsletter, putting it in the Clahoose newsletter, having those different representatives really, really help. But just, yeah, all around increasing accessibility is a really big thing that we want to work on. So we're super stoked to see all these programs come into the community.
Louis Belcour, CKTZ News, Cortez Island.
An evacuation alert has been issued for Trout Lake due to the nearby Alpha Creek wildfire, which has grown to nearly 600 hectares in size. The evacuation alert is for the north end of Armstrong Lake to Trout Lake and Trout Lake up to Lardo Creek to Cup Creek. It includes Ferguson, Five Mile, and CM Galena. The city of Revelstoke issued the evacuation alert on Tuesday morning on behalf of the Columbia-Shuswap Regional District Area B. The alert remains in effect as of Thursday, July 25th. In issuing the alert, the city said, quote, "There are multiple fires within the surrounding area of Trout Lake, including one fire that is threatening to move downhill, which presents a risk to access and egress. At this time, there is no concern of immediate threat to the community," end quote. The BC Wildfire Service lists lightning as the suspected cause of the Alpha Creek wildfire. A storm system moved through parts of the Southeast Fire Center on July 17th and 18th, resulting in an increase in lightning-caused wildfire activity. In an update on its website, the BC Wildfire Service said air tankers and helicopters are supporting ground crews who are strategically responding to current and emerging wildfires in a priority sequence. Trout Lake is located approximately 90 kilometers southeast of Revelstoke. For 92.5 Stoke FM in Revelstoke, I'm Melissa Jameson.
And that's this week's episode of The Scoop, a podcast and broadcast featuring stories from remote BC by the journalists in the communities of Smithers, Cortez Island, Revelstoke, Kootenay, Prince George, and Terrace. This program was made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Local Journalism Initiative Program. Tune in next week for another episode and follow us online wherever you get your podcasts.